Hello and welcome to Talking Theater. I'm Alex Dunovan, and today I'm joined by a former guest, Michael Bradley.
Hello.
He's here today for his thesis production of Lady from the Sea that he adapted from the work by Henrik Ibsen, and it's going up at the Studio Theater and the Tim Center from May 18th to the 27th. So you've already been here before, so we've had a little chat about your background, and if anyone's interested in hearing more about that, they can check out the second episode of this podcast. But I wanted to talk a little bit about what was it like getting to this point in this program? What are some of the things that have kind of guided you on your way here?
I have found since I've been here that I've been really fascinated by directors who sort of take old things and make them new, essentially. As a project, like that's been sort of exciting to me in terms of the directors I've been looking at and reading about and writing about. And
who are some of your favorites?
Right now, the ones that I really am drawn to are, for example, Thomas Ostermeyer from the Schabon Theater. Ivo van Hove, I'm interested in his work a lot. I'm interested in Declan Donnellan's work with Cheek by Jowl. I'm interested in Peter Hinton's work here in Canada. There's a bunch of them, and for various different reasons. Romeo Castellucci, although I don't know that I am seeking to emulate his work, I'm fascinated by the way that he takes the bones of something old and then says something new with it. So that's been kind of an ongoing project of mine, is how to do that as a director.
Yeah, well, I think part of this program is it encourages looking at these other directors to see what sort of interests you, right? And I mean, I doubt any of us really try and emulate specific directors, but instead just kind of garner different lessons from their work.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So all that has sort of led me to this project, which is me adapting a piece by Ibsen from 1888. And, you know, it kind of went in stages, I suppose. Like, I started looking at the kind of modern classic canon, and I knew that I was interested in that kind of milieu, and so I started to look at, you know, Ibsen's plays and which ones... which ones didn't have, like, you know, you weren't seeing them every season somewhere, and also sort of just what spoke to me, right? And the thing that really sort of speaks to me about his work particularly, and this piece specifically, is the kind of mythos underneath it, the sort of the Norwegian and Scandinavian sense of mythology, and the kind of the way that it sort of overlaps with ideas of archetypes and sort of Jungian ideas of sort of embodied aspects of the psyche, and how that all kind of interweaves. So this piece really spoke to me on that level, and
they kind of deal with, I mean, a lot of the modern classics and a lot of the classics in general deal with pretty big ideas, right? And I mean, I think we see to varying degrees sometimes more contemporary work went onto the smaller scale, or some still tackles the large, but it's interesting to have a play that takes on such a wide berth of things, such as Norwegian mythology. So how did your kind of research of the mythology of Norway kind of fuel into this play?
Well, the fascinating thing that I, and you know, obviously by no means am I an expert at it, but the thing that sort of fascinates me about it is that it's a very much embodied spirituality, in that all of the sort of mythical features, creatures, and sort of figures are things in the world. They're things that you can put your hands on and touch, and they can come and kill you, and they can take you away, and then the spirituality of it is not sort of ethereal. It's very much in nature and in creature. So that's what I find very interesting about it, because it's, I think it's so impactful on Ibsen's sense of the world, and you know, this piece is very much it moves well into that vein, because it, you know, on the one hand, it's one of his few pieces that's not sort of inside somebody's house, sort of set indoors in somebody's drawing room, and you know, I mean, it's on the landscape of Norwegian fjords, and that sensibility of you know, it sort of moves through, you know, living on a mountainside by a fjord, right, which is a sort of a brackish kind of interweaving of seawater and mountain runoff, and it's sort of connected to the sea, but distinctly not a part of the sea,
right?
And the sea is far away, and yet there is this sort of like body of water, and then there's this other body of water that's just this sort of stagnant carp pond, and it's all kind of it's a play about the sea, but ultimately it's a play about the absence of the sea, and it's sort of like the sort of longing for chaos and deep power.
And the absence of the sea is, I mean, speaking as someone from the Maritimes, coming out here, I'm like, where is the ocean? It can be a very real feeling.
That's really funny, because you're not the first person to say that to me. And I've been to visit the sea in various places, but I lived in PEI as a little kid. But, you know, people that I have spoken to who come from the East Coast and the West Coast have said that that's something that they instinctively understand in the story, is that desire to go back there, that sense of the sea being home, if that's where you come from.
Yeah, big time. And that's very fascinating too. I mean, when you talk about the side, like even for Ibsen, this is a bigger play in some ways than a lot of his work, in the sense that it's all set in those kind of drawing rooms, and yet you've got this more expansive sort of location to work with here. How was the adapting process of bringing this kind of very specific Norwegian world into the sort of contemporary?
Well, for me, what I found is that, you know, by even just looking at the play, I'm kind of passing through a couple of filters. I'm passing through a filter of a sensibility of the world that is particularly Norwegian in the sense of the sort of mythology of the place, and then also passing through this other sensibility of kind of Victorian society and Victorian playwriting style and conventions and you know, gender politics and all of that stuff. And so I sort of made the decision very early on that what I was most drawn to was that subterranean and primordial kind of sensibility, and so I wanted to take away the other barriers, the other filters between me and that. And so I decided to, you know, at first I was going to look at it, you know, a good adaptation of it, and kind of go, okay, well, I actually have yet to encounter a contemporary English language adaptation of it. I mean, there are ones that have been done in contemporary times, but they're all set in the period of the original play.
That's fair, because I think even the most recent Canadian one, because Aaron Shields did one, but I'm pretty sure it was set in in the same time frame. It was contemporary English speaking, but it was still set.
Yeah, and it's a very good adaptation, and the language of it is very lively and visceral, and it's quite good. But for me, there still was that barrier that I wanted to set aside, because ultimately, what spoke to me about it is the voice of people that were much, very much like me, and people that I know. It's funny because I always, you know, I ultimately, the reason why I am drawn to something is I see myself reflected in it, right, in some way, and that's my first inroad, right, and so, so then I sort of said, okay, well, rather than trying to, you know, put a round peg into a square hole in terms of like, okay, I'm going to put everybody in jeans and t-shirts, and then we'll all use text that's set in a Victorian time, I just made the sort of decision, you know what, I think I can just write this, and then I have free rein with it, which is great, which is the great thing that you want when you're approaching an old play, is you don't want to suddenly feel beholden to a playwright who's not present, you know, and never will be and is long gone, right? The thing is, I really love being in the service of a playwright for contemporary work. I think that contemporary work is exciting, and working with a living playwright is so rewarding. because you're bringing somebody else's voice to life and trying to interpret it else, right?
I think it's kind of, there's this weird thought of like the text is holy kind of thing. And even when you work, like, I've done lots of work with new playwrights, even doing one now. And when they're in the room, they change the text as it goes, you know,
totally.
Like, because that's part of the playwright's job. When they write something, they think it's going to sound one way, and then they hear it in the bodies of an actor. And it's like, oh, wait, maybe I change this. So with someone who's gone, it just seems to make sense to be able to form it and change it as you go.
You know, and the great thing, you say that, and it's entirely true of what we've discovered in our rehearsal process, too, because it's just different when you get people doing it, you know, if you approach something that's published and it's got a production history under it that's still new, like, those kinks have mostly been ironed out, and it's a matter of trying to find your way into it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you say, with new plays, and, you know, so I've created a new play for all intents and purposes, and so we did have some workshopping of it through the rehearsal process where this basic discoveries of like, I don't need you to say that, I can see it, right? The moment is landing without you saying the thing, and then the sort of wonderful discoveries that you get from actors, right? And when they start to really take ownership over the role, and you go, oh yeah, you're right. That is more exciting. And to have the freedom to go, let's change that line for your really exciting choice, right? Like, that's the reason why I like doing these older plays, and so I'm just really happy that I didn't decide to take another person's adaptation of it, because then I wouldn't have that freedom.
Yeah, because it's an interesting exercise at times to do the older adaptation, see if you can make it work. But it's like, why not just?
Sure.
Make it work already. Like, and then you can remove that step and that layer of difficulty, and not even necessarily difficulty, but almost sometimes it's kind of like archaic. It's like this, like,
yeah. Well, like, I mean, it can be, and I did find, you know, I found Aaron Shields' version, I found Pam Jems' version, the British version, and they're very exciting and wonderful adaptations, but they just weren't what I wanted, right? And the decisions they made were not the decisions that I wanted to make. And so ultimately, I thought, well, here I am at grad school, and here I am with the ability to sort of make bold choices. And so that's what I did. And you know, and funnily enough, like through the, I had sort of a happy accident where there was a small role in the original play that I was having a hard time finding somebody to play it, because I needed, you know, a small role and I can't pay the person, but it's also I need somebody sort of older in their 60s, right? Their 50s, 60s, 70s, that I just couldn't find anybody who was available. And so I thought, well, what else can I do? And I went back to the text again, and I actually made sort of like a wonderful discovery of taking that role and the key things about that role and putting them into one of the other roles in the play. And suddenly I have this smaller role that we have that was, you know, the role of Hilda, who is one of the daughters of Vongel in this play. It's a relatively small role in the original, but now she suddenly got so much more depth because she's become a more all-encompassing figure. She's become an outsider and an insider.
Oh, that's really cool, too, because, I mean, Hilda is one of the ones people will recognize. I mean, that's the only character who actually goes on into another production, because I believe Hilda is in
The Master Builder.
Master Builder, yeah. So that's kind of neat to make Hilda more of a character in the play, because that's one where it's people might be like, oh, I think I actually know that character a little
bit. Well, and you know, like, just in terms of archetypes and in terms of mythical figures, right? That, you know, a discovery I made in my research is that the name Hilda is actually a derivation of Huldra, right? There's a sort of a mythical figure in Norwegian folklore called the Huldra folk, right? And they're these kind of like forest creatures with tails, and they're, you know, like sort of an elfish kind of thing, which, you know, like a lot of this mythology overlaps with things that we recognize from Anglo-Saxon kind of,
and the Celts too,
like, so we see these figures in Tolkien, and we see these figures in a lot of kind of fantasy folklore, and so and somebody who's kind of an outsider figure, and, you know, and she's this kind of wonderful teenage sort of latchkey kid in this play that kind of is left to her own devices, and so now she becomes this real sort of observer figure as well, which is cool.
So you've talked a little bit about this, but what's the rehearsal process been like so far? And I know you just started doing your Q2Q and stuff, so I wonder if you just talk about the process to now.
It's you know, I really, really lucked in to a great group of actors, because what I had high hopes for is the idea that these people are going to come in and be and collaborate with me on crafting this play, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the type of artist I like to work with, is somebody who's going to come in with ideas and offers and challenge my concepts and put them sort of hold my feet to the fire and say, well, what about this, right? Because ultimately, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 of us all working together, you know, including the design team, like that sort of mixture of ideas is gonna create the best work, rather than my ideas sort of on high and everybody else trying to climb up the steps to get to them. Like, that's just not the kind of director I am. And so I really, you know, it's been very collaborative. We spent a lot of early days of exploration and discussion and play on our feet with stuff outside of context, exercises and sort of physicalizations of inner states, and just like lots of stuff to kind of like get everybody playing together and ultimately kind of going, okay, well, this is our show here, what are we going to do with it, right? And so what I have found is that so much of what we discover comes organically from that. And my task is to help shape it, right? And to sort of see what's coming out here, and then to go, that taps into what we've been talking about. Let's hold on to that and make it more pronounced and make it more direct.
Cool. That's awesome. And so, what was the transition like? Because I know this is, you know, you've been working in the Blevis the past 2 years, but what was the transition like coming into the Tim's stage?
Well, it's, you know, there's just a lot more moving parts in some ways. The idea of it is very similar, right? The idea of that transition. But, you know, things take a little bit longer, and there's more people sort of on task doing things, but there's more channels to go through to get things happening. And, you know, over with the Blevis, you know, most of the people that we were working with, including myself, it's sort of first, second, third attempt at that sort of massive collaboration within this institution, right? And so now we're in the Tim's, where very few people are doing the thing they're doing for the first time, right? Yeah. Which is cool, right? And some of them I'm working with again, right? You know, like Tegan, my stage manager, we worked together last year, and so we have an understanding already, and we've been building on it through this rehearsal process. And moving into tech and moving into all that stuff, like, it's just, there's a lot more moving parts, right? I mean, sitting in the opening sequence of cues yesterday, I was just like, oh my god, so many things to talk and see. Like, can I see it again?
Yeah, right? Did I see it all? What am I looking at here? Yeah. What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, but it's really exciting too. Like, I know that beginning directors don't get the opportunities that, you know, working on indie stages is the first kind of steps that people take, and so to be on a big pro stage with flies and just the whole sort of moving lights and just like all the bells and whistles, right? It's exciting because it sort of cracks open possibilities and gives us lots of tools to tell the story, which is pretty cool.
It's what's lovely. I mean, we're very used to, I know I came from the indie scene too, and it's like you're working with maybe the lights they've got set up that are like, well, you got a couple areas here and I'll give you two specials maybe, and you're like, make sure your set can get off this stage. Like, you know, you're like, you don't get to like really set things up well. And so even working in the Blevis is can be special at times too, where you're like, oh, I have an actual set, and then to go to this stage that is just ginormous. And I mean, or at least long, that's for sure. It's a whole new kind of world to have that big of a team working on there.
And even just working on a prop stage, like, you just don't get to do that very often in indie theater. It's very much, it's mostly black boxes and storefront theaters and I love that stuff. It's very exciting. Like, to I've got $50 and 3 hours of tech. What are we going to do? Right. Like, you can get a lot of cool stuff coming in that mode of working. But, you know, this is something else, right? Where we kind of go, we have all the things. I mean, obviously we don't have an unlimited budget or an unlimited amount of time, but what is really cool working in the pro stage is going, okay, well, this, we can really make a picture here, right? We've got a big square to make a picture in, and then let's lean into that, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we're using the main curtain for the first time, and I don't know what they didn't tell me, but I think it's been a while since they've dropped the main curtain in this theater, and it's just not something that people often do anymore. It feels
it's kind of a callback in a lot of ways. You know, you do like a little, you're making this contemporary play, but you've got a callback to the older the older styles, right? Which is fun. I mean, that's what theater is in a lot of ways, right? We're communicating with the past and bringing it into our present and playing with that and seeing what happens. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with me. Like I said, you can see the show from May 18th to the 27th in the Tim's Center. Anything else you want to say?
Well, please come see the show. I'm excited.
Absolutely, and congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, until next time.